Yes.
Okay, what's going on?
We had people over last night. We were drinking. Most of us went to bed. One of them stayed on the balcony. She was drinking, and we just went outside, and she's laying face down in the backyard. It looks like, I'm guessing, maybe she fell off the balcony, but she's stiff.
Okay, is she breathing?
I don't know. She's face down.
Okay. How old is she?
At 41.
Hello, you're listening to
Crime Chicks, a true crime podcast devoted to our listeners.
Warning, this is not for kids.
Today, we will cover the unsolved crime of Tamla Horsford. My name is Piper White.
And my name's Tierra Brown.
And we are back. We missed you all. A week without a crime story.
It's truly heartbreaking, but I'm really glad that we are back doing our thing with you all. And this is a really special episode.
It is. It's celebrating our season one finale. 10 episodes with you all. That's crazy. It seems like we just started this.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it really doesn't feel like we've done it for this long. Like, we've been super invested in this, and it's just been so easy being able to just sit down and talk about this because we know that we have a great listenership. We have people that are interested in this and wanting to listen, and we have each other.
We have each other.
I'm happy to know that. Every time I get on here and I get to see Piper's face, it just literally makes my heart explode. I swear. I felt like, you know, just as a way to kind of recap this season finale, we could start off just by kind of talking about how this journey's been for us.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
So guys, I'm sorry, I'm eating a brownie. I'm always eating during these. Okay. So we kind of started off randomly, a day of visiting each other, saying, hey, let's create a podcast.
And we stayed up all night recording. We went from the first episode, we were outside, you could hear frogs. We had one microphone. Like, we've been through it. And now we're kind of legit.
We're literally like, so we started off that day sitting on her bed, cranking out name ideas. Had no idea what we were about to call this. And the day that we released our first episode was like the same day that we recorded it. And the day we did the research when it was the same day, it was just like the most harebrained decision. And we just decided to do it just out of nowhere. And the fact that it's just developed over time, we went from traveling to one another, buying microphones to make sure that our audio sounded better, and just really just trying to get invested in our research. It's crazy to just to see how something developed and how we're able to invest in something that we don't have to do.
Yeah, and how much we've grown, like, from the first episode. Like, I feel like we've learned so much throughout this season, and continuing to get better each episode, coming to you all with better research. And, like, this episode's really special because you've already heard the first clip, a little sneak peek of the call that was made for this episode to the police.
Yeah, so that was a audio clipping, like Piper said. It was a 911 call about a woman who was found face down in the ground after a adult sleepover party. So I guess we can go ahead and
Let's get into it. All right.
So like Piper said, this is about Tamla Horsford. So this is a 41-year-old woman. And she lived in, I don't really know how to say it, Forsyth, Georgia. Sounds right to me.
Yeah.
And so this woman, her husband kind of describes her as being an amazingly nice, kind woman. He said that she had the biggest heart on this planet. So she was married to him for 16 years, and she was a mother of five. Well, one was a bonus stepdaughter that she raised. So she was an active boy mom, and she shuffled between supporting various activities with all of her kids, really just kind of like bragging about her kids and her family every chance that she could get. And so she was known as Tamla, Tam, or Tammy, and everyone said that she was nothing short of amazing. She lighted everyone's lives up. This woman was just an all-around kind and giving person. So, you know, it's just, when you hear the story, it's really just extremely heartbreaking. Anyone that she met, she was super loyal to, and it was not hard to be her friend after meeting her just for a couple of minutes. And, you know, when you meet someone kind and nice, it's really easy to grow attached to them, you know?
Yeah.
When you really find someone that's loving and really giving, and that's how all of her family and friends describe her as. So, kind of getting into the night of what led to that 911 call. So, she lived in a place called Forsyth, Georgia, just kind of moved there, didn't really know a lot of people. Little back history on Georgia itself. So in 1912, in Forsyth, residents there terrorized and drove out the entire black population of about 1,100 black people.
What?
Yeah, this was the white response to two incidents, the alleged rape of a white woman by a black man and the rape and beating of a young white woman who died of her injuries. A lynch mob attacked and hanged one black suspect and two teenagers following a short trial, and they were hung in public. So that's just a little bit of back history on this place. And, you know, segregation was there for a while. So this place has a really weird history between them and black people in general. So that's just setting the preface for this. So, like I said, this woman was so kind, so sweet. So the night that she was supposed to go to this party, her husband said that she spent hours making a breakfast casserole for her family, like him and the boys, so that they didn't have to worry about what they were going to eat while she was gone at the party.
So she was a 10 out of 10 mother and wife. Yeah.
In life and with her family. Okay. So Tamla was invited to a football party / birthday party / adult summer party on November 3rd. 2018 at Jenna Myers' house. So the plan was to go to this LSU Tigers versus Alabama Crimson Tide. And this was supposed to be a girls only event.
Little girls night out.
Yeah, girls night out. And everyone was told to, you know, bring some alcohol or, you know, food or whatever they wanted to bring to this party. It's just, you know, like a little football event. So she brought a bottle of tequila, and everyone was supposed to get there at 7 o'clock, and that's when everybody started trickling in. Tamla got there around 8:30. So she brought Jenna a bottle of tequila, but supposedly Jenna didn't like tequila. So Tamla ended up drinking a lot of the tequila by herself.
I mean, yeah, you can't let it go to waste.
Yeah, why would you let it go to waste? You know, everyone said while she was drinking, she was just so happy, so excited to be with everyone. She was one of the 10 people there, all white women. Tamla's black. Tamla is the only black person at this party, female.
Okay.
Everyone else is white. And let me share this, my screen with you really quick, just to kind of let you see an image. It's one of her last images that have ever been, you know, taken with Tamla in it. So if you just look here, I kind of want to just dissect this image really quick. And you guys, if you're listening, definitely look up.
We'll post this on our socials.
Yeah, it'll be on Instagram. It'll be on our social medias. So to describe this image, as you can see, Piper, that's Tamla in the center of this picture. Mm-hmm. Everyone's all cuddled up to each other, a bunch of white women. And I feel like if you look at this, you can kind of see how close everyone is. And I just feel like Tamla is just in the most awkward situation right here. Like the way that this woman sit, like kind of away from her.
like her knee is pointed away from her, which is usually like psychologically wise, like when you're pointed, when your body language is like that, it's like you're not interested in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone else is like wrapped up in each other, and she's kind of just like leaning in on this other lady.
Yeah, and I just feel like that woman looks uncomfortable, weirded out, kind of just doesn't really fit in with the scene. But I just wanted to kind of point that out before I start going into more details. So let me stop sharing the screen with you now. The night of her death, the night of this 911 call, she's at her party with these people. She is at Jean Meyer's house. And all of these moms are football moms. So all their sons played football together. I'm pretty sure Tamla moved to Georgia so that her son could play football here.
Okay.
So they were all connected with football. Some of them she had know well, but she really wasn't really close friends with any of these women. But regardless, you know, they all went to this party. They had gumbo. They were drinking. Apparently Tamla had some marijuana with her. And so she had, like, rolled a joint and smoked it. And it seemed like some people may have, like, took a hit or two. But she was mainly the person smoking the weed. But that's really nothing crazy. You know what I mean? Weed's legal in a lot of places. And
no, it's not crazy at all. Like,
and everyone...
It's a party, too, like...
Yeah, with adults.
I don't think there's anything weird about that.
Yeah, so everyone at this party said that Tamla did drink a lot of the tequila by herself, and that she did smoke a little bit, but they said she was not inebriated, extremely bad. She was not acting crazy. She was just happy the entire time. And the reason that this was a slumber party is because Myers didn't want anybody driving home.
Okay.
So, fair enough.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of images and a bunch of videos that kind of show Tamla at this party. It looks like everybody's having fun. They're standing around. And then you can see there's some men. So these two guys were supposed to stay in the basement the whole party. But they came up and joined the ladies. And I think it was the husband of Jennifer. So Meyer's boyfriend, I think it's Jose Berea. I think is... how you say his name, not 100% positive as to say his name. So he came upstairs and started watching it. And also another man came up the stairs. What was his name?
Who were these men? Were they husbands of some of the ladies?
So one was the boyfriend of Myers.
Okay.
Of Jean. I think her name's Jean. So one was the, and then there was another man that came upstairs as well. I'll have to get everybody's names. Together there for you, but Jose is really the one that we're kind of focusing on and paying attention to because he's the one most interconnected with this story. So after she, like, you know, drank this tequila and everything, they all, whenever the guys came upstairs, they started playing a game of Cards Against Humanity. So let me pull up this police report that kind of explained how the night kind of went down. So they said that on the account of the night, on midnight, guys included, everyone sat around the table in the living room and played Cards Against Humanity. The game continued for about an hour and then they stopped. People began cleaning up and getting ready to settle for the night. Jean, I don't know how to say this woman's name, J-E-A-N-N-E, Jean.
Never seen a spelling that before.
We'll call her Jean. Jean said Tamla had wanted people to stay awake because she was just having such a good time. She was just really enjoying herself. Like I said, this woman's super personable, super kind, super sweet, very loving. Loved being around people. So I guess this party was just a really big moment for her to be able to, you know, kind of have a ladies' night because she's in the house full of all these men constantly. She's boys. All the time.
I'm sure that'd be exciting, like something to do other than like have to deal with the responsibilities that she does every single day.
Yeah, and it just sounds like she's a stellar class act mom, so yeah. You know, she's probably just all the time giving and giving and giving to her family, which it's a loving situation, but you know, to have a second where you can step back and hang out with the girls is big. But the thing is that made my heart just explode was at one point, Tamla had FaceTimed her husband and children so that everyone could see her family.
Like, she, even on her night off, she still wanted to show them. Like, so clearly she is, like, I didn't even know her, but I can tell, like, she was a really great person that loved her family, like, dearly.
She loved these people. Those were her guys. I mean, from what I can understand, she relocated just so her son could play football here and everything. Like, she just really was so in love with her family. Extremely in love with her family. So, at one point, she said that Tamla was just having such a good time. She wanted everybody to stay awake. She was very sociable. She kept trying to talk to everyone. But they eventually started cleaning up, and everyone had kind of left off to go to lay down and everything, and Tamla was the only one left in the living room, supposedly. And that's the last time anyone saw her alive.
And just for everyone listening, that was in quotations.
Definitely a bunch of air quotes. Hi, Michael. How are you? My boyfriend has entered the chat. Making a cameo on the podcast. You want to say hi? Bye. Okay. So, you know, this night, they said Tamla wrapped with a bottle of tequila, drank a lot, had weed, took a shot of Fireball as soon as she got there, and just continued to drink her tequila with Mountain Dew and Ooh. Water mixed in.
Ooh, what a combination.
Sounded extremely... I can't say that I would ever try that.
No, I've never heard that before.
To each his own, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So everyone was just saying that it was a great time, but around 1 o'clock, whenever they finished their game of Cards Against Humanity and had a FaceTime call, the slumber party had died down and everybody started going to bed. So she wanted to enjoy her night out, so she stayed up a little bit after. But according to a security camera at 1:47, according to the security system of the front door, someone else stayed up as well because it's just the door open. Weird.
Yeah.
So there's this, after the back door is open at 1:49, this is where Tamla used to go to the balcony to smoke because she was the only smoker there. So supposedly she had gone out multiple times to smoke and had left her cigarette butts on the back porch on the ledge. Jose told the police officer or the investigator that while he was cleaning up the following morning, he found an unlit cigarette and a lighter laying on the floor of the porch. The burning of the cigarette matched the cigarettes that Tamla smoked. So supposedly she was, you know, the last one awake, and she had went outside to smoke a cigarette. And so this, apparently, like, this app showed whenever doors were open and closed. It's kind of like showing times. This is how we know what time the door was open. Okay. This is where things get extremely, extremely, extremely complicated. So let me just kind of go over when people started leaving.
Okay.
So,
like, kind of the morning now? Or is this at night?
This is still at night. People started trickling out at night. Nobody was supposed to leave until the morning time. Mm-hmm. But people kept leaving at night.
Interesting.
So, the last person to see Tamla alive was Bridget. Bridget told police that she saw Tamla, who told her bye, and Tamla was sitting eating a bowl of gumbo and was the last one awake in the house. So okay. This is shortly before 2 a.m. Other women had headed home or picked up by rides while others went to bed in different rooms in Jean's house. Tamla, on the other hand, had already planned to stay overnight to sleep in Jean's son's room. But, you know, she'd stayed out and was talking to people and everything. And like I said, Bridget was the last person to see Tamla alive, who was sitting down eating a bowl of gumbo. Was the last one awake in the house. And this was a little bit before 2 a.m. front door was open at 1:47 a.m. Then the front door was closed at 1:47 a.m. Then the back door was open at 1:49 a.m. The back door is this balcony door is where Tamla's at.
Okay.
Back door was closed at 1:50 a.m. Back door was open at 1:57 a.m. No other notifications of the door being closed or open after that.
Okay, so it seems like maybe she wasn't the only one awake in the house, like they had said, because she couldn't possibly make all that movement in that short amount of time.
Right, well, was she just standing there opening and closing the door?
Yeah, and then the front door, the back door, the balcony, like...
Someone else was opening that.
Yeah, someone else was clearly awake.
And I read somewhere that it was, I think, daylight saving at this time. So the hours are possibly skewed as well.
Because,
you know, things jump either forward or backward an hour.
Okay.
So that's just, the timing of everything's off. This door system is funky. He tells the police, brings up the fact that they have some type of, like, footage or something at one point during the investigation, and then that's just dropped. Never brought up again.
What?
Like, why can't we look further into all of this security stuff that you have? And then all of a sudden, they just don't seem interested in really figuring out what happened to Tamla. Like, the police do not seem interested in it whatsoever. Like, this is just, it just seems really nonchalant as you continue to read this. So whenever, this is what pisses me off, whenever they start interviewing people, this is a quote from the, from when they were about to start interviewing people. Give me one second. So, the interviews were done at the house with every single person there. So they're all in this house together.
Why was that done?
More than enough time to talk about things.
Right, like they could come up with a solid plan on what exactly to say. But why was it done at their house in the first place? Like,
yeah, and it looks like it was done around 10 o'clock maybe. So this is spanning from being called at 8:40-something, 9 o'clock, to 10 o'clock. There's more than enough time for you to talk about what happened with what correspond with one another.
Especially while someone else is talking, like they could all be continue talking.
Exactly. And there's also a sketch of how the body was laid out too, that I'm going to send to you and we're going to post. And there's just so much that goes into this. This just does not make any sense, because the way that she felt, it seems like she knew that she was getting like
pushed,
tossed off of the balcony. Yeah. I don't think it was a self-inflicted thing.
I'm not an expert. I say this every episode, but I'm just thinking like the balcony probably came at her midline, maybe a little taller, maybe a little shorter. But if she would have fallen, like flipped over that, there's no way she would have, like in my mind, landed the way she did, like face first. Like I felt like she had to be shoved or like tossed, because I feel like your body would flip when you hit that, unless someone like forced it.
Well, here's a little tidbit of information about the police there. In the last 10 years, according to Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Georgia police have shot and killed at least 184 people, nearly half of whom were unarmed or shot in the back. Black men were twice as likely to be killed by the police as white. Just this month, and this was from an article that was written June 21st, 2020.
Okay.
So just this month, police shot and killed a black man named Rayshard Brooks after they found him sleeping at a Wendy's drive-thru, setting off a wave of protest in Atlanta. So this is just showing how Georgia investigators kind of handle things. It's just
they're starting to make a little more sense why they are running this, and I say this loosely, investigation, because I don't know protocols, but I've never heard or read about a case where they hold the investigations at the person's house.
With everybody there like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's just talk about
that makes me so mad.
Yeah, so Jose stated he and Myers went to bed around 1:30 in the morning, and Tamla was still awake. He said he told them she was going outside to smoke a cigarette and would either go to sleep in one of Myers' children's room or would sleep on the sofa. Jose said he went to bed and was awakened the next morning by Madeline Lombardi telling him that he needed to come look at something. So she didn't even tell him what the heck it was. Like, it's just this.
Come
just
look.
Like, come look at something.
Yeah.
He said that's when Madeline took him out to the body of Tamla Hasford. Jan Myers, her account of the night. So she says, on Sunday, November 4th, 2018, I spoke with Jean Myers regarding the incident. She stated she had wanted to have a birthday dinner with friends, but did not want the hassles of going out. She stated she came up with the idea of inviting some girlfriends over for a pajama party. Jean said that they had a good evening with some drinking and that everyone had gotten along well. Jean said that she and Jose were in the process of going to bed, were saying goodnight to Tamla. She said Tamla told her she was going out back to smoke, but would be in a few minutes. She said they went to bed and were awakened the next morning by Madeline Bardi knocking on the door and asking for Jose. Jean said they went outside to find Tamla face down in the backyard, asked both Jose and Jean how much Tamla had to drink and what condition she was in. They stated she had brought her own bottle of tequila and had drank most of the bottle. Both described Tamla as happy but not seemingly overly intoxicated. Now, Madeline Lombardi. Madeline was the first person to see the body of Tamla in the backyard. Madeline stated she had gone to bed before anyone else. She said she had gotten up around 8:30 in the morning and looked outside. When she saw Tamla lying in the backyard, she said she went upstairs to get Jose and Jean. She said Jose came outside and checked Tamla and called 911. So, let me read you a little bit from Jean Myers' interview.
Okay.
With investigator Christian. So, this is on the 9th. All right, it's November the 9th, 2018. It's about 3:55 in the afternoon. Mike Christian, Tyler Sexton, and we're here with Jean. First and foremost, why in the heck is it the 9th of November when this incident took place on the 4th?
I was just wondering that too. Did they not make it a priority?
Well, it shows, so my thing that doesn't make sense to me is this incident report explains that they were spoken to on the 4th, but now we're revisiting it for a second interview.
So maybe they thought something was up?
Listen to this. Okay. So, Mike Christian, Tyler Sexton, and we're here with Jean, and he pauses, and then Myers, he's like, Myers, sorry, she says, it's okay, he says, too many people I've been dealing with today. Jean, of course, we're here to talk about the incident that took place Saturday night, Sunday morning, with your friend Tam. Let's address one thing real quick before we get there. You came into the room when we were talking with Madeline, and we appreciated the fact that you were going to get us gift cards, but we could not accept them, and it would just make things look weird if we did. So
he was going to get gift cards for the police?
Okay, so this is Jean Myers. This is a female. This is the party host.
Okay.
So this is, let's just talk about the fact that this interview, all these interviews are out in the open. If this woman, Jean, can just walk around and offering people gift cards just goes to show that there was no type of, like, privacy when talking to all of these different people. She's just roaming around.
But why was she giving them gift cards in the first place?
She offered them gift cards.
Like, that, in my mind, that means, I feel like she's up to some, like, that's
definitely
just walked
into the room, like, in the middle of their investigation, in the middle of their interview, and just offered them gift cards. Obviously, she,
like,
has.
Like, we're currently investigating a possible murder, but here's some gift cards for you. Like, what?
My mind is blown that this is an actual thing.
And they didn't think anything of it. They were just like, thank you, but no thank you, basically.
Listen, and she says, I understand what you're saying. And he says, thank you for the thought, but we cannot accept. And she says, okay, my kids will take them, okay.
What?
Yeah. Like, what? What were you doing with the gift card anyway?
I'm just speculating here, but maybe that was like her idea of kind of like buying.
She was bribing the hell out of these police officers.
Elite, I mean, them. Gift cards. Come on now.
Some daggum gift cards. Like, what? Who did that? You gotta have some balls to just walk up and try to, but that's privilege too, to think you can just walk up and offer someone gift cards.
During a supposed investigation. And I say supposed because this clearly wasn't held like a typical investigation.
No, no, no. And there's no reason to be trying to give anyone gift cards while you're being questioned during an investigation for someone's possible murder that died at your house, dude.
Yeah, like what the hell?
So let me read you some more of this transcript just to kind of tell you about her account of the day after the fact. So Christian says, well, tell us this whole party, how it came to be. Just start at the, and it's kind of inaudible. And she says, my 44th birthday was the, And I'm also an LSU fan. The game was Saturday night. I wanted to watch the game and knew that we all would drink and said, why don't we just have it here at my house as a pajama party / swimming party so no one here has to risk drinking and driving or calling an Uber. And that my kids would all be at their father's house, so we had enough room for everyone to sleep here. And so she goes on to talk about how the invitations were sent out. And everything, bring your own beer, appetizer, and she just keeps talking about the party and everything, but she says that Tam was the last one there around 8:30, because she had texted Stacy and I saying she had to fix dinner for the kiddos, and then she would be here. She actually texted at 4:17, looking forward to seeing you beautiful ladies in a bit. Stacy responded me too, and then at 6:52, she said be there by 8:30 making dinner for the kiddos, and had to make a pit stop. And then he proceeds to ask her, how do you know Tam? And she says, our youngest son plays football with, I believe, her middle son, second oldest son, the second grader. It's just so sad. You can see how excited Tam was to do all this. She had no hesitation. Again, making food for her family, being so considerate enough to tell them why she's going to be late to a party. Like, this woman is so sweet and kind.
So what happens after the investigation? Do they come up with any solutions or...
So I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I'm going to read some more of this police report.
Okay.
So, before I get into what happened, so on the 5th, we're backtracking here a little bit, Investigator Christian spoke with Kurt St. Hoare, I'm not really sure how to say her father, but that's her father's name, over a phone call. He was wanting to know more information about the death of his daughter. I'm just going to read to you word for word what this police report says, because it really touched me. I asked him if he wanted to come in and sit down with me and speak in person. We made arrangements to meet around this time. I met with Kurt and a family member, friend Rochelle, which I watched some interviews with Rochelle, and this woman was super close with Tam and her family. In my office at the sheriff's office headquarters, I answered Kurt's questions in general as best as I could with the little information that I had at the time. I explained to him that until the reports from the GBI returned, I would not be able to tell him exactly what happened to his daughter. Kurt said that Kurt still questioned, and I asked him if it would help if I showed him pictures of the scene. He stated that he wanted to see the pictures. So I went through the scene pictures with him. This only seemed to cause Kurt to have more questions. Like, duh, of course you're gonna have more freaking questions. Anyway, he stated that the death scene was suspicious to him. I explained that that is why Tamla went to the GBI for an autopsy in order to determine why or how her death occurred. I explained to Kurt that based on what we had initially seen, we had a theory about how Tamla came to rest where she had. I explained it looked like she tripped off a piece of the landscape edging and had fallen into the place and position she was in. I explained I could not tell him why she had died, but the tripping theory seemed the most plausible at the time. So the police kind of came to a result as she tripped.
What?
I guess they're saying in balance of the fact that she had marijuana and alcohol in her system, and her alcohol was 3 times the legal limit of Georgia's driving. It was like 0.23 something or another. It was extremely high.
Okay, still a trip.
I'm saying this is their theory though.
Yeah.
But everyone there said she did not seem extremely like intoxicated. Like, she seemed balanced and just extremely happy, and she was eating gumbo, and I think she probably collected herself and smoking cigs, like, she was cool.
Yeah, so, and it seems like her last conversations were pretty...
She's pretty coherent. Yeah. Not to the point where you can just fall over a piece of landscaping and fall into place and position that she was. I explained I couldn't tell her why she died, but that theory is the best. And he'd let her... no more as soon as the GBI reports trickled in. The visit ended with me explaining to Kurt that I would keep him appraised of future developments. So this is how the conversation with a Coop Minor GBI, this is the Associated Medical Examiner with the Georgia Bureau of Investigations. And so Kirsten says, I began the conversation by explaining how Tamla Horsford had been found. I also explained my theory of her tripping over and have some sort of medical event. I don't, maybe he's meaning like being too drunk, alcohol poisoning maybe. So Dr. Coop Minor stated it would have been impossible for Tamla to receive her injuries from a ground level fall. He explained that she had suffered a broken neck as well as a subdural hematoma on the right side of her skull and a torn heart muscle. I explained okay. That she had been found in front of the balcony, the deck of which she was approximately 14 feet off the ground. Dr. Kupermeyer stated that a fall from the balcony could produce such injuries. I asked if he would like to see the scene pictures, and he replied that he would. I explained that I'd put them on a DVD, and I'd get them to him. And so, the police report ends with Tim talking about that how he returned back to the scene on the 6th to look at the backyard and look at for evidence of the impact of the fall.
Okay, but if she would have, okay, say it was a trip, okay? No blood anywhere. Like, if you hit your face like that, or, I mean, I just don't know. Like, that doesn't seem plausible to me. Like, I would not be okay with, oh, that's how she died. She tripped. No, that's not okay with me. I don't think that's right.
Yeah, it none of it makes any sense whatsoever. None of it makes sense. It doesn't add up. Those injuries are extreme.
So is that like as far as they get? And then they just kind of like stop?
It was all resulted as an accident. And basically what the theory is what was taken. But there's just so many people coming into out of this home. The whole investigation was just, you can see the fact that they have just opened this investigation for anyone who wanted to be in the freaking building whenever it was happening. And the autopsy shows that her falling was the most likely scenario, that this is what the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, quote unquote, everything, there was just an abrasion on her forehead, her left eye, the bridge of her nose, temple and her chin, a fractured vertebrae, her wrists were dislocated, and the laceration was on her heart. The toxicology report showed that her level of 0.24 and traces of THC and Xanax were in her system. Now, what? The Xanax is something that is unexplained to most people. Her family does not know her to have ever taken Xans before or anything like that. So, a theory is possibly was she roofied?
That would make a lot more sense, and as to why she could have possibly fallen, but I don't even think she, like,
No, I think
someone with the door activity and every, like, why didn't they look at that? Like, they said everyone in the house was asleep, according to one of the ladies there, other than Tamla. But then all this activity at different doors, and then they just don't think anything of that.
Exactly. And I'm searching to look at the door. So a speculation is that there may be home security camera footage. Because in an email correspondence between homeowner and Christian possibly points to the use of Arlo home security products. There may not be any extra products that prove that there is video surveillance, but there's a little clipping of an email of them talking about how to see if they can recover things and everything. Nothing makes really sense. It raises a lot of questions because the timestamps of the doors make absolutely no sense.
No, and of course they didn't look more into that.
Okay, but this, the thing is, at one point in this, 911 call, here.
I don't believe anybody was. My girlfriend has cameras here on the back deck that we can check.
Okay.
That I think would have caught the incident if she fell from here. Again, I don't know. It's hard to say if she fell from the deck or if she was already downstairs. She was the only smoker here. And I'm sorry. Thank you. I don't know.
So did you hear what he just said?
Cameras?
Why is that not mentioned in this police report? One, let me just double check. But from my understanding, at no point in this police report is there any mention of these cameras at all.
I'm a little bit familiar with this case. And if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do remember there being cameras from that call. But then when they show up, the footage is not there. So why wasn't that looked into?
That's a good question and should have been the first freaking thing that the police looked into the minute that they stepped into that building. Why was there no further investigation into the fact that there's quote-unquote cameras on this back deck that can be checked? What happened to those allegations?
Yeah, and why isn't that? That should have still been reported in the police report.
They could have seen that footage, and Jose literally says, Jose didn't want that footage to get out there.
No.
And he made that quite clear by not even bringing it up or showing it. And Jose also, give me a second to look up this information, but I'm pretty sure had a hand in looking up the police reports before they were released.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Great question. Jose Barea worked for the Forsyth County court system and used his position to access a report from the incident and actions that officials says was unethical and led to his firing.
Yeah. So
things really started to go awry with the public being like, what the heck is this guy up to?
And I'm sure that's the only reason he was fired.
Yeah, and that's another thing that started more speculation and brought up public interest in this case again. And her family had been fighting and fighting and fighting because they did not think, with great reason, they didn't think that it was fair that her case was handled the way that it was. Obviously, the people that were investigating it did not do the job that they needed to do.
Clearly.
None of it makes any sense. There was foul play for sure. Her injuries are ridiculous. So her family decided to open up their own investigation and fought to get this case reopened.
Yeah, it should. Is it? Has it?
So Ralph Hernandez, an attorney for Hordesworth's family, says he's repeatedly pointed to inconsistencies in her injuries that make a second story fall being the cause of death impossible. And let me just revisit all of the injuries that she has, if that's okay. Yeah. So Horsford showed blunt force trauma to her head, neck, torso, and extremities, including abrasions of her face, four types of hemorrhages in the skull and brain, dislocation of her right wrist, and cuts on her arms and legs. Additionally, she suffered a broken neck and lacerations of the right vertical ventricle of her heart. According to the incident report written by lead investigator Mike Christian, Horsford's body position was also examined at the scene. Most notable, quote, he says, when Tamela was turned over, was the fact that she had come to rest face down. Her head had not been canted to one side or the other. Horsford's legs were found extended behind her with both of her feet pointing to the right and her right arm close to her body, and her left arm was found extended and bent at the elbow. Her family's attorney says that the cuts on her hands and wrists were particularly suspicious and could have been a defensive wound from fending off the attacker. He also questioned why security cameras at Myers Homes that just happened to be off the night that Horsford died.
But he said that they were.
The next morning, whenever he made that call, he told investigators the cameras ran out of battery and stopped recording.
Oh, convenient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sounds like
at one point, there's cameras, but then all of a sudden, they're not working or recording anymore.
So let me just play this back to you real quick. So there is suspicious movement in the house, even though everyone is supposedly asleep other than her. There's cameras, but then they happen to be turned off the night of this horrific crime. And then also her injuries don't even add up to the story, but yet they still want to go with she just tripped.
Listen to this.
Am I correct? Is that all?
There's more.
Oh, okay.
So let me go back and read this part of the police report. Hold on.
I'm mad.
This pisses me all the way off. Let me see here. Because he talks about what he saw whenever he arrived to the crime scene. On Sunday the 4th, I arrived at the scene. The residence itself was cordoned off with yellow crime scene tape. There were approximately 8 to 10 people milling about in the roadway in front of the residence. What are they doing there?
What?
Doing what? Yeah, okay. Also, here's another thing. So Horsford's attorney says the police compromised the investigation into Horsford's death in a way that will make it difficult to get answers. One, and this is not the attorney saying, this is my addition, everyone was able to talk to one another. At one point in the police report, he says that Christian walked in and saw that people were sitting working on their statements together. Like, what?
Okay, so, and to even add that, the investigation wasn't even held properly at all.
Yeah. So he states, the attorney for Horsford family says, no fingerprints were taken at the scene. And Rhea admitted to moving Horsford's body in order to check if she was alive.
Who admitted that?
Jose.
But he said he wasn't going. She told on the call, she told him not to touch it, her.
Not to like move her around. Yeah. He also moved an unlit cigarette and lighter on the deck before moving Horsford.
What the hell?
The scene of her death was never secured and no sexual assault kit or fingernail clippings were collected. And in an interview with Rolling Stone, Fernandez also pointed out to the unheard of lack of autopsy photos, which he says must have been done at someone's direction.
I literally have chills.
Yep.
So they did not even fingerprints at the a potential murder investigation, and they did not get the bare minimum fingerprints.
Okay, according to Forsyth County News, Brea also leaked information about a close friend of Horsford, Michelle Graves, who has accused the attendees of the party, known as the Forsyth 12, of being responsible for Horsford's death. Like, it's the case was compromised. The whole case was compromised. Something went on wrong. Something completely went wrong. The investigation was not done right. Georgia Bureau of Investigation botched this whole entire thing, and that's why this has been reopened.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. So, This is Forsyth County News, coming from Forsyth County News. June 18th, 2020. The GBI has agreed to Forsyth County Sheriff Ron Freeman's request to open an investigation into a November 2018 theft of Tamla Hortsford, according to Nellie Miles, Public Affairs Director with the state agency. But before that happened, in February 2019, the case was listed as closed, but public outcry demanded more investigation. With the murder of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter movement, Tamla's case went viral. And in June 2020, which I just read, mm-hmm. they announced that they were reopening the case.
Well, good, because something needs to be done about that, because I don't believe for a second that it was just a trip. And I think anyone, probably anyone listening to this episode completely agrees with that. Like, nothing adds up to it just being a trip. Nothing.
Right. So it just shows, and the family wants someone else to take over the investigation, because what was done is just wrong. They do not need to be, GBI does not need to be in control of this case once again. So they can, what, rebotch it? Horrible idea. So yeah, that's where we are with that case. Completely and utterly makes absolutely no sense at all.
No, it doesn't. And I'm actually like, my heart's racing because it's so infuriating. Okay, I'm not even going to say that.
Infuriating, yes.
Infuriating.
It really pisses me off to think that this Black woman, regardless of her race, but I think it's obvious that this is some type of race play that's coming in.
I mean, even off of what you stated at the very beginning of the episode from that article within the past 10 years about how crime or police brutality is more common towards Black women and men in that area as well.
Exactly. And then even before that, in 1912, with this whole
right.
running out of the whole Black population gone. Mm-hmm. There is also some obvious animosity between the people of Forsyth with their Black community members. And the fact that she was the only Black person there is eyebrow raising. This obviously wasn't, or must not have been, a very Black populated group of people. It didn't really seem like they knew her that well. It didn't really seem like they were too stoked about her being there. The fact that there was gift cards trying to get out during the investigation shows that there was something trying to be covered up. And the fact that Jose wanted those papers before they were released is another.
He wanted to change them or something.
He wanted something. But the thing is, I'm pretty sure he had his hand. I'm speculating that he had his hand and making sure that this was a botched investigation the way that it was. Why, oh why, did he even mention any type of video cameras if the batteries die? There's just so, so many questions that just breaks my heart for her family, for this sweet, kind woman.
I mean, thankfully, it's reopened, but we, like, need to, they better figure out who actually did this or who all was involved in this, because maybe, I mean, I'm speculating, but I feel like it was probably more than one person involved in that situation.
Yeah, and the fact that the first person that saw her dead said that they dropped their knees.
Yeah.
The fact that Jose sounded so reluctant to check her pulse, but at the same time moved her body, like, what is going on here?
And moved items. So he probably knew exactly where to move them to.
To make it look like she was taking them smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And the family is just, her family is just saying that this is just completely, it's unlikely that anything that they said happened, and I believe her family. I don't think any of this makes any sense.
No, I hope we can, like, get some justice for her and her family, because I couldn't imagine, like, I'm mad listening to it, but imagine being her family members or her actual friends and how they must feel, because I'm sure they think it was a wrongful to close it in the first place.
Absolutely. And it was a horrible investigation. This investigation was horrible from beginning to end. And I think that her family deserves every bit of justice that they can get, because this is ridiculous.
No, they definitely do.
It shouldn't have taken George Floyd's death to get this reopened, but I mean, since it did, you know, let's just use it and work with it and find out what happened to this poor woman, because there was no reason for her to be killed in the way that she was, or to be killed in any type of fashion. She sounds like an outstanding person, and it just breaks my heart for her and her family. Like, all these pictures that I've seen of her, she's just smiling, and she's just in love with her family, and you can see in her face. She is just a family woman, and all of her little boys, and her husband of 16 years, it really blows my mind that anyone could hurt this woman.
Well, I hope that we just something comes and gets resolved with this case, hopefully sooner rather than later. Thankfully, it was opened, but all we can do is try to get justice for her and her family, because they definitely deserve that. I mean, that's the bare minimum of what they deserve, honestly.
Yeah, and I don't know. I really don't. I can just keep repeating myself about how mad I am. But I hope that at the end of the day, justice is served. Well, I'm just going to give you all the FBI's number. So 770-216-3000. And then I'm sure you can reach out to the, Forsyth Sheriff.
We'll write the number as well in the description of this episode.
Of course, the number will be there. The number is 770-781-2222. And that's the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office. So call them, call the FBI if you have any information that will assist to finding out what happened to Tamla Horsford. I'm sure any type of information will be greatly appreciated by her friends and family. And it will be also a great joy into being able to close this case and get justice for this family, because what happened to her was completely unnecessary. Completely unnecessary. And as you guys probably have noticed and understood, this is not a West Virginia case.
We're transitioning.
Yeah, so we are going to not completely disbar West Virginia cases, but we're going to move into more national cases, more known cases, things that can actually, because a lot of the cases that we touched on are either cold and stuff of that matter, and this is something that I think, you know, this began in 2018, and that's not that long ago. I feel like this is kind of one of our most relevant cases to date.
And it would help, like, we really want to help her get some justice and her family, like we keep saying. So we're kind of transitioning, like, talking about these, so hopefully we can help the process, like quicken the process. Maybe someone listening has something to share, and like, if we can help in any way, that's what we want to do.
Exactly. That's our goal. And I don't really know if I need to touch on this or not, but if any point throughout this podcast you heard us giggling, like when we talked about the alcohol or anything like that, like we've said before, we're coming to you with straight facts as usual, but we are two females, we're two regular human beings, two regular people. This is not some like cut dry podcast where there's no laughing whatsoever, and if we're ever laughing, we're never laughing at the victim. But I think that's quite clear. But you know, there are some people that skew it and try to say crazy things, but Piper and I literally have these cases that we read, we have people's best interests at heart, but we are also just going to make it easier to digest and to just kind of like be ourselves while we're telling these stories. Right. I'm not going to mask who I am, and Piper's not going to mask who she is to try to appease anyone, but we are just doing this not only to tell these people's stories, but we're having a conversation with you, and it's easier if they like to connect with people if you're yourself.
Exactly.
So that's where we're coming from at that standpoint, and we hope to give you guys more cases in the future, some closed, some open, regarding not only the criminals, but those who the crimes were put up against. And I'm excited for you all to dive into season two with us.
Yeah. So with that, let us know what you think on our Instagram and Facebook at Crime Chicks Podcast. Let us know what you think of this episode, future ideas for our upcoming episodes for season two. This is going to be a whole other journey. So be prepared for that. And if you don't have Instagram or Facebook, you can let us know what you think on our Twitter at crime_chicks.
And if you don't have social media, you are an extreme weirdo. What's wrong with you, you hermit? My boyfriend doesn't have social media, and there's definitely something wrong with him. But you do have access to us via email. So you can go to thetruecrimechicks@gmail.com. There's no underscores, no dashes, no caps. All one word. You can tell us what you think about our episodes, what you think about our show as a whole, what you think season two should center around, and some interesting cases that are quite relevant or cold, whatever you want to hear about. Shoot us an idea. We'll definitely put it into consideration. We've had a few cases that have been brought up to us, like Mad Butcher and Charisse Gwynn, which, mentioning this, I know on the day that this is going to come out, it's going to be anniversary of her missing on October 1st, her missing / murder. So just want to touch on that again, and I just want to send out my deepest condolences and my thoughts out to her friends and family, because they've been looking for this woman for quite some time, and I know that her family has not given up. So I just want to send out my thoughts and my vibes out, and Piper and I, on behalf of Crime Chips, just want to go and say I am so sorry that you all are still going through this, and I hope that something breaks for you all soon.
I really hope.
Yeah, but I just wanted to mention that. I just thought of that. But be sure to also leave us a review on iTunes on the podcast app. Just click on Crime Chicks, scroll all the way to the bottom after you've listened to every single episode. Tell us what you've thought about this. Give us 5 stars. Give us a review, and just let us know what you think, because what you say means so, so, so much to us. We truly care.
We really do.
Go ahead, Piper.
And with that,
stay
curious.
Peace out.
Bye.
Oh my gosh, we did it.
That was a really good one.
I know.
That was really good.
I liked it.
Oh, I thought I stopped the recording.